Hello and welcome to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring discussions and research papers related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Robert Johnson, a York Rite Mason and Knight Templar. Welcome back to the show. We have a great show this week. I hope you've all been doing well. This has been crazy week for me, working some 12-hour days, and a friend of mine got married. We have a first degree coming up at my lodge, and I have to get some of my ritual memorized. It's nuts. Anyway, I'm sure you and the other brothers out there listening can relate to how crazy the schedule gets. Anyway, last week I finished up the How to Become a Freemason segment, and I hope you guys really pursue it if you can. If you ever have questions, please feel free to email the show at wcypodcast@gmail.com or just drop a comment on the webpage. I let everybody know last week that we would be covering the appendant bodies of Freemasonry in the coming episodes, and we read a good paper last week which had some history of the appendant bodies in it. I also want to point out that in this particular episode, I'm not going to cover Prince Hall Lodges as an appendant body, because it's not an appendant body. Prince Hall is normal Masonic temple founded by a man named Prince Hall, and I think it will it'll need its own episode in the future. It has so much extensive history that it needs its own episode. Anyway, it got a bit off topic. So let's get to these appendant bodies of Freemasonry, which are as follows and are in no particular order. The York Rite, which consists of the Royal Arch, and that is your 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th degrees. Then, within the York Rite, there's also the Cryptic Council, which is your 8th, 9th, and 10th degree, and then the Commandery, or Knights Templar, which is the 11th and 12th and 13th, which, in the order of the temple, is equal to the Scottish Rite 33rd. Also, there are some other degrees within the York Rite which are standalone, like the Mortar and Pestle degree, which is for people in the health occupations. The Scottish Rite, which, unlike the York Rite, is one body under the title, and there are 32 degrees and a 33rd, which is not something you can get unless you're nominated to get it. I should note these are current organizations. Appendant bodies that are gone, like the Rite of Perfection, I can't cover in depth because of a lack of information on it. However, I will try and get as much detail as possible for all of you. In addition to those other two, the York Rite and Scottish Rite, there's also the Order of Demolay for Boys, the Rainbow Girls, Job's Daughter, and Order of the Eastern Star, or also it's called OES. And finally, the Shriners. And that's it for the appended bodies, the main ones anyway. So let's start with the York Rite, and the first body within the York Rite, which is the Royal Arch. After becoming a Master Mason at your local lodge, you can ask for a petition into the York Rite body at a stated meeting, or from a brother that you know to be such. Similar in character, it is a system of degrees that is split off of the Blue Lodge, or the Main Lodge, in the 1700s. There are 4 degrees in the Royal Arch, and one thing that is different about the York Rite degrees is that they are interactive. That is, you are in the middle of it, just like you were in your first 3 degrees in the Blue Lodge. The Scottish Rite is more of a watch and learn, while York Rite is centered around 3 candidates most of the time. The 4 degrees top at the Holy Royal Arch. That's the 7th degree. And it should be noted that, regardless of faith, in Blue Lodge, you only need to believe in a higher being, not anyone in particular. But the York Rite does have a Judeo-Christian kind of overtone. It's very Old Testament, but nonetheless, it's an excellent source of history, and you will learn things that change your life if you have the ability to see it. So let me read you some of the history about the York Rite. So it should be noted this comes from www.yorkrite.org. The York Rite of Freemasonry, its appendant bodies, and other allied Masonic organizations, for reference. The York Rite, or more correctly, the American Rite, is based on the early remnants of craft masonry that were practiced in the early 1700s. The formation of the first Grand Lodge of England in 1717 specified that lodges were to confer only the degrees of Entered Apprentice, Fellow Craft, and Master Mason, all other degrees being considered spurious. However, many lodges had been conferring other degrees that they had considered an integral part of Masonry, in particular, that of the Royal Arch, and formed their own Grand Lodge in 1751, terming themselves as the Ancients, and the other Grand Lodge members, the Moderns. With the merger of the two Grand Lodges in 1813 into the United Grand Lodge of England, the lodges agreed that only the three accepted degrees of Masonry would be used by the lodge. But the degree of Royal Arch would be attached to the chapters allied directly to these lodges and bearing the same number as the lodge, though as a separate body. Thus, unlike ancient and accepted Scottish Rite, which claims to hold the power of conferring the first three degrees of Masonry in addition to those under its jurisdiction, those found in the York Rite have rightfully acknowledged the fact that they are considered a pendant to those ancient craft Masonry. It is still the practice in English Masonry that a Masonic member is not considered to be in possession of all the degrees of ancient craft Masonry until he has been exalted to the Royal Arch. Early American lodges operated in a similar manner until the establishment of the General Grand Chapter of Royal Arch Masons. For a period in U.S. history, the cryptic degrees were controlled by various state Grand Chapter jurisdictions until the establishment of a General Grand Council. The chivalric orders have been controlled by the Grand Encampment since the early 19th century in the United States. All three bodies are technically autonomous Masonic entities. Only the requirement of a membership in a Royal Arch connecting the cryptic degrees and chivalric orders together. A pendant to the York Rite bodies are several additional Masonic bodies, most of which are invitational in nature. Membership in many of them is predicated on membership in the Royal Arch, though some have memberships predicated on other bodies of the York Rite, or membership in all of the York Rite bodies. Many are found in other jurisdictions outside of the United States, but several are uniquely American in their origin. The Capitular Degrees, General Grand Chapter. The Capitular Degrees are a set of four degrees controlled by the Royal Arch Chapter. They center on the construction phases of Solomon's Temple, with the exception of the degree of Past Master, hence the title Capitular. The degree of Past Master is the vestigial remnant of the former custom that the degree of the Royal Arch could only be conferred on a Past Master of a symbolic Blue Lodge. In the United States, these degrees are considered as proprietary to the Royal Arch, while in England there is no Past Master degree as found here, and the Mark Master degree is controlled by its own Grand Lodge. The Most Excellent Master degree is also part of the cryptic degree in England. As stated in the foreword, the Royal Arch overseas is controlled by chapters attached to English Blue Lodges. The Royal Arch chapters have occasionally been referred to as the Red Lodge in older Masonic publications, though they should more accurately be described as the Red Degrees. In the United States, all chapter business is conducted in a Royal Arch chapter, the other bodies being only opened for the conferral of degrees. Some jurisdictions open Mark Master lodges as the Table Lodges, which act as a social focus for the local York Rite bodies. Mark Master, a degree that emphasizes the lessons of regularity, discipline, and integrity. It is a most impressive degree centered on the story of the fellowcraft of the quarry and their role in the building of the temple. Its importance in English craft masonry can be judged by the fact that it operates as a separate Grand Lodge and is highly sought by members of the craft in that jurisdiction. Past Master Virtual. A degree that emphasizes the lesson of harmony. This degree is conferred because ancient custom required that a Mason must be a Past Master in order to be exalted to the Royal Arch. In some grand jurisdiction, this degree is conferred upon all sitting masters of the Blue Lodge. The degree confers no actual rank upon the recipient, but is exemplified to maintain the ancient custom. Most Excellent Master, a degree that emphasizes the lesson of reverence. This degree is centered on the dedication of the temple after its completion, particularly the consecration of the Sanctum Sanctorum and the descent of the host into the temple. It is complementary to the Mark Master degree and completes the symbolic lessons introduced in that degree. Finally, the Royal Arch. The completion of the Master Mason degree and the summit of the original degrees of the Blue Lodge as practiced in ancient lodges of England before 1820. The degree explains the origin of the substitute world found in the Master Mason degree, the recovery of the ineffable word, and its concealment within the Royal Arch word. This degree, together with the Master Mason degree, may have once been exemplified as one large or super degree, with the Master Mason degree explaining the loss of the Master's word and the Royal Arch explaining the recovery of the Master's word. The presiding body is a chapter, and the presiding officer is a high priest. Title: excellent. And again, this information is available at www.yorkrite.org, the official page of the York Rite. The York Rite, being an appendant body, and there are dues for that lodge as well, it should be noted that all lodges and appendant bodies have dues per year usually, but all this money keeps the craft around through charities and fellowship. I had a friend who was interested in becoming a Freemason, and he asked me, why do you have to pay money? I told him the usual things: charity, regalia, paying for the utilities of the building, etc. But then I said something else. I said, look, in becoming a Master Mason at my lodge, with the petition fee, the dues and degrees, I spent about $320 my first year. And I got a good dinner every Monday night for 52 weeks. That's a nice dinner with friends for $6 every week. He laughed and he agreed. So if you want, you know, you guys can look at it that way too. I hope that you get a burning to join the York Rite. And next week we'll continue the York Rite in the next set of degrees called the Cryptic Council. And now it's time for the famous Freemason segment. You know, I was watching cartoons the other day with my kids, and the Looney Tunes was on, but it was a resurrected version that Cartoon Network has started, and it's really funny, and not to mention my kids love it. And it kind of turned them on to the old Looney Tunes show that we all used to watch. So much talent and great humor came out of that show, and almost all the work of a couple people, one of which is an icon. So without further ado, Whence Came You presents... Mel Blanc, voice actor, American icon, and Freemason. Mel Blanc came out of Midday Lodge number 188 in Oregon, and that lodge still has a stated communication the second Saturday of every month at 9 a.m. Breakfast starts at 7:30, and the following information is from justamason.blogspot.com, and it's about a three-year-old post from September of 2009. Mel Blanc and his Shriner buddies. Mel Blanc was a part of everyone's childhood. There was a time you couldn't get away from him. Warner Brothers cartoons were on TV every day, except Sacred Sundays at one time. And there was Mel, as the voice of Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Sylvester, Porky, Foghorn Leghorn, and the list goes on. You could hear him as Barney Rubble on the Flintstones. And at night, a local station ran old-time radio shows, and there was Mel again, as Jack Benny's violin teacher, as well as a broken-down pre-Chrysler product. A happy postman delivering to George and Gracie, and a Mexican talking to a hayseed named Judy Canova. Today would have been Mel's 101st birthday. Mel was a Mason, and I've documented his comments about Masonry and the Shrine from his autobiography at this post. But I've stumbled across another reference to his life as a Shriner in a recent hunt through old newspapers. This one is one from the News of Van Nuys, California, dated January 20th, 1970. Besides Blanc's name, I'm sure you'll recognize one other, maybe a third, if you're a fan of the 1960s sitcoms. Entertainer's Shrine Unit to be led by Mel Blanc. Mel Blanc, the man of a thousand voices, who is known throughout the world for his movie, radio, and television work, has been elected president of the Show Business Shrine Club of Al Malaika Temple. Blanc and other officers and directors will be installed at a dinner dance to be held on Friday beginning at 7 p.m. in the Empire Room of the Sportsman's Lodge at 12553 Ventura Boulevard. Music and entertainment will be supplied by Manny Harmon and his orchestra. Other new officers are Bart Conrad, First Vice President Bernie B. Lane, Second Vice President Don DeFore, Third Vice President and Eugene L. Zola, Secretary Treasurer. Newly elected directors are Ernest Borgnine, Tom Franderson, Manny Harmon, John F. Golden, George B. Hunt, Paul Miller, Ralph L. Blink, Milt Canfield, William F. Hertz, Leonard D. Hess, Ben S. Levy, Theo Nowak Jr., Joe Popkin, Arthur Rockwell, and Max Salet. Levy is chaplain, Max Kleckner is publicity chairman. Blanc has gained international recognition by circling the world with humor for many years in a variety of performing arts. First on radio, then via animated cartoons in motion picture theaters, followed by recordings and television. Even after more than three decades, Blanc voices Bugs Bunny, Sylvester Cat, and Speedy Gonzales, plus a string of other distinctive characters. Stahl are delighting an estimated 30 million daily throughout the world. Born in San Francisco 59 years ago, Blanc was reared in Portland, Oregon. He started in show business. He says, entertaining students and teachers, getting big laughs and lousy grades. In his early teens, he created The Cackle, later to become Woody Woodpecker. Blanc and his wife Estelle, who co-starred with him on his early radio shows, Live in Pacific Palisades, their son Noel is president of Mel Blanc's Associates. So though Mel has been dead for almost 20 years, he still lives on in the wonderful characters he helped bring to life. And we hope in his work with other Masons, who put on a fez to help children in need. And it should be noted again that that is a three-year-old post from our friends over at http://justamason.blogspot.com. And with that, we will go right into our Masonic paper of the week, entitled What is Freemasonry? An address by M.A.R. Howard, DGM, Deputy Grand Master of the Most Worshipful Grand Lodge of AF and AM of British Columbia, Past Master of Adornium Lodge No. 118, Vancouver, B.C., Member of Walter F. Meyer Lodge of Research, No. 281, Seattle, Washington, Editor, Masonic Bulletin of the Grand Lodge of British Columbia, delivered before the Conference of Grand Lodges of the Four Western Provinces of Canada at Banff, Alberta, on September 5th, 1958. In defining itself as a system of morality veiled in allegory, Freemasonry takes itself seriously. There are no side issues involved as to benevolent aims or social objects. These, or other desirable methods of expression, are left to grow out of the more comprehensive definition quoted. To the profane who has never been within the walls of a lodge room, Freemasonry is the aristocrat among secret societies. To him, the appeal may be curiosity, admiration for its benevolent practices, or a desire for social fellowship. I do not know of a man joining the Masonic order because he understood it to be a system of morality or because there was an intellectual appeal in its philosophy and symbology. It seems a pity this appeal could not be made for more manifest to the outside world, but no one can receive knowledge for which he is not prepared. In the practical working out of our Freemasonry, the keynote cannot always be pitched on the high levels of philosophical exposition, but too often the degrees are conferred without the emphasis on instruction. Hence the odious term degree mill is deservedly applicable. Freemasons are made, not elected. Freemasonry is not a benevolent society. That is, the primary aim is not benevolence, but being a system of morality. The virtue of charity is one of the prominent teachings, and a front rank place must be accorded benevolent practice and charitable conduct. Individual Freemasons, or lodges, or even grand lodges, should not delude themselves with the idea that they are functioning to the fullest degree by the practice of this one virtue. Neither is Freemasonry a social order. It is not a club for the enjoyment of social intercourse alone. Man is gregarious in his instincts, and these instincts ought to be given expression. But here again, the social side of Freemasonry ought to be subordinated to the main theme, Just as in the harmony of music there are many parts, the undue emphasis of one of these will cause discord. Many Freemasons profess to find in Freemasonry a religion. Morality is a very good soil out of which spirituality may grow, but morality and spirituality are different elements of character. Freemasonry has no solution to the problem of man's attitude to deity. The recognition of the fatherhood of God is only partial in its answer. It has no solution for the problem of pain, sorrow, and evil in the world. Neither has it a solution for the problem of the hereafter. It does not seek to make bad men good, unless, of course, they are Freemasons. In short, it does not function as a religious experience. It is all very well for the young man in whom abounding physical well-being may be obscure spiritual promptings for a time to say, out of his lack of life experiences, that Freemasonry is good enough religion for him. But as he grows older and tastes of some of the bitter experiences that life holds in its lap for all of us, sooner or later, he will realize that Freemasonry is not a complete answer to the riddle of existence. What is Freemasonry? And again we return to its own answer, a system of morality veiled in allegory. But this simple statement is not provocative of further questioning. It is simply a restatement of the simple moral truths we all learned from our parents, from our Sunday school teachers, or from the minister in the pulpit. Nor is there in profundities of the symbology and intellectual appeal that must be sought through serious study. Many Masonic students have found in it such an appeal. What is Freemasonry? A system of sublime truths, including those of the natural universe as well as the moral and intellectual science and philosophy, based on the accepted fact that one almighty, infinite, and perfect deity called Freemasons, the grand architect of the universe, the perfection and completeness of the order of the universe, its correspondence with itself throughout, that is, in all its paths and degrees, the coordination of these last by correspondence. From first to last, their correspondence with the degrees is found in man. In the same order, the immortality of the human spirit, a righteous system of divine government, the enjoining of the practice of all moral and social virtues and duties by means of lessons embodied in symbolic representations of deep significance, together with the apt and wisely ordered discourse, all contain certain ancient and simple but sublime ceremonies coordinated in degrees, according to the order of the universe, which is the divine order. Further, that the filling up of this general scheme is by lessons not taught in words so much as by representations of correspondences actually existing in the constitution of natural and spiritual things, in their several degrees and cognizable by man, that these lessons, in order to their perpetuation, are embodied in the form of the lodge, and what may be found therein, and especially in what is termed the work, the principal truths and illustrations being set forth by means of geometry upon which science, as we are expressly taught, Freemasonry is founded. And yet, we have not found the answer to the question, what is Freemasonry? Freemasonry is a word used to describe the beliefs and practices of Freemasons and the way in which local units called lodges are governed and linked together. A craft rather than an order, it is a secret only in having rituals and other matters not to be divulged to non-members. A society with secrets, but not a secret society. Its places of meeting are prominently identified, and its governing bodies publish annual proceedings. The membership is a matter of record, and perhaps sometimes public knowledge. In communist and completely totalitarian countries, Freemasonry is proscribed. The Roman Catholic Church forbids its members to be Freemasons. Although many of that faith were active Freemasonry in the 18th and early 19th centuries, in Great Britain, the Commonwealth countries of Scandinavia, the United States, and other nations with similar institutions, heads of government, dignitaries, and distinguished citizens are Freemasons. Men from all walks of life meet together in their adherence to a moral code, whose principles are largely conveyed through symbols and allegories connected with the art of building, emphasizing benevolence. A Freemason, it was said in 1734-1735, is to be a man of benevolence and charity, not sitting down contented while his fellow creatures, but much more his brethren are in want, when it is in his power without prejudicing himself or family to relieve them. Is there one amongst us who, at some time or another, has not asked himself, what is Freemasonry? What is it all about? Who of us has not wondered how it is that, simple as its teachings appear, it has so gripped the imagination of men and has retained its appeal and influence throughout the centuries, and is still the greatest moral force, with the exception of religious institutions, the world has ever known? When we can answer those questions, we will have a clearer vision of the order and the purpose of Freemasonry. Far be it from me to suggest that I can hope to give a complete and satisfactory answer, but rather that I may express some thoughts on the subject which will assist one to reach one's own conclusions. Also, that I may be of some assistance to our younger brethren in interpreting the beautiful symbolism of our order, the key to our treasure chest which holds for us the wisdom of the ages. There are many definitions of Freemasonry. For instance, our ritual defines it as a peculiar system of morality, veiled in allegory and illustrated by symbols. Another definition is that it is a science which is engaged in the search after divine truth. Still another writer interprets Freemasonry as friendship, love, and integrity. Friendship which rises superior to fictitious destruction of society, the prejudice of religion, and the pecuniary conditions of life. Love which knows no limit, nor inequality, nor decay. Integrity which binds man to the eternal law of duty. Perhaps the most complete and best definition is that given by the German handbook, which states Freemasonry is an activity of closely united men who, employing symbolical forms borrowed principally from the Masons, trade and from architecture, work for the welfare of mankind, striving morally to ennoble themselves and others, and thereby to bring about a universal league of mankind. However inadequate these descriptions may be, they all indicate that Freemasonry has a very noble objective and purpose, and I might add that without such a purpose, it would long since have passed into the oblivion, and could not have survived the ravages of time. Why is Freemasonry here in this world of strife? Wherefore has it been developed amid war and incessant conflict along lines of peace and love, and so marvelously molded and developed, that in every land it is known and by every race made and welcome? Has all this been done that it may live for itself alone? No. There on its trestle board is the plan of the great architect, and its mission is to work out that plan. Out the rough, hard quarries of quarreling humanity, it has to build a temple of brotherhood and peace. This temple is the great landmark, the highest and grandest ideal of Freemasonry. To build, strengthen, and beautify this temple, we must exercise all the powers and gifts with which we are endowed. What nobler work can we be engaged in? How far we are, as a rule, from understanding it. Yet, it is ignorance more than unwillingness that hinders the work. That is a noble conception of the purpose to which Freemasonry is dedicated, and if we examine our ritual and symbolical teachings, we will find this great ideal continually brought before us. Free and accepted, or symbolic masonry as we know it, emphasizes that we are builders in the spiritual sense. Hence the fact that the working tools of the old operative Freemason occupy a prominent place in our lodges and are used in the purpose of instructing us in great spiritual and ethical principles of which they are symbolic. Those tools with which operative craftsmen earned their living were also, because of the great moral and spiritual teachings associated with them, used by him to think out his faith by which to live. The connection between operative and speculative masons may be briefly considered at this juncture, as it may be helpful in the consideration of our subject. For many centuries, lodges of operative masons existed and reached their greatest strength during the cathedral building era in the Middle Ages, when magnificent cathedrals were erected throughout the Old World. It was also during that period, known as the Dark Middle Ages, that there set a decline in moral and spiritual standards. And so, it happened that the most exquisite gems of architecture were surrounded by hovels in which lived a depraved type of humanity. The viciousness of human nature formed an appalling contrast to creative genius and craftsmanship. Was it this that caused the progenitors of our order to believe that principles of disciplined and devoted craftsmanship productive of such beauty and architecture could be applied to human affairs and enable men to build a superstructure, perfect in all its parts, honorable to the builder? And so with the gradual decline in the building era, and the consequent decline in lodges of operative masons, modern Freemasonry gradually grew in strength and inherited the symbolism and teachings to be used to stimulate in the man dignity and high purpose of life. And so with our ancient brethren, our Freemasonry has much in common with those same symbols and tokens, signify the great spiritual truths underlying its teachings. And although Freemasonry is no longer engaged in erecting temples in stone, it carries on the teaching that we are engaged in building a spiritual temple, which age cannot affect nor death destroy. erected on the everlasting foundation of the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man. Freemasonry is not a religion, neither does it refuse the membership to men on account of the religion they practice. Christian, Jew, Mohammedan, or Buddhist, it matters not. Worshipping God as the supreme being, they may enter its ranks. It respects every religious faith and belief, and honors men as men irrespective of their social status. It has no creed of bigotry and no spirit of intolerance. It makes for morality and humanity and brotherly love in the widest and noblest meaning. To ensure happiness, man must live with God and man. The very first requirement of the Freemasonry is an expression of his faith in God, and when progressing through the various stages, is impressed with the lessons of charity and mutual help, which better fit him to take place in the world as a man and a citizen. The ultimate truth he learned is that the real soul of Freemasonry is to be discovered in its fellowship and service for God and his fellow man. Of this great truth we are constantly reminded, and it is conveyed to us in many aspects of our symbolism. Therefore, what is Freemasonry itself, if not a world builder, a social architecture on the grand style? With its fellowships established in every nation under heaven, its activities never ceasing night or day, its message uttered in nearly all the languages of the race, but always the same message. It is one of the highest, mightiest, one of the most benign, and one of the most constructive of all forces in the world. When its work is finished, which will not be until the end is ended, it will have proved itself a builder of an unseen cathedral, more noble, more enduring than any ever made of stone. And with that, I hope you all enjoyed this week's episode. As usual, I would invite you to subscribe via iTunes or RSS. Alternatively, you can always hear the latest episode on the website via the Flash Player. I would like to also invite all your friends to listen as well. And, like before, if we hit that 100 subscriber mark, we can go ahead with the Whence Came You Android app, which will give access to the show via Android platform for those without an Apple device, and it will also include exclusive content for those that have the app. Thanks again for listening to the show. Be good and be safe. The Whence Came You. I'm Robert Johnson. If you could stand on top.